Appreciation Day, and welcome to The Backbone, the podcast dedicated to the Army's paralegals and the non-commissioned officers who lead them. I'm your host, First Sergeant Candace Green, the NCOA Deputy Commandant. Throughout my career, I've served in operational and institutional assignments across the Army, giving me a firsthand perspective on the diverse roles Army paralegals play in support of commanders and soldiers. One thing has remained constant: our profession continues to evolve, but our commitment to supporting the mission, upholding the law, and developing the next generation of legal professionals never changes. This podcast exists to have honest conversations about leadership, training, readiness, talent management, professional development, and the future of our profession. Whether you're a new paralegal, an experienced non-commissioned officer, or a senior leader invested in developing the Corps, The Backbone is a place to share ideas, challenge perspectives, and learn from the leaders shaping our regiment. Every episode features conversations with leaders from across the Judge Advocate General's Corps who bring unique experiences, lessons learned, and a vision for strengthening the profession. Our goal is simple: to develop better leaders, build a stronger Corps, and prepare Army paralegals to meet the demands of today's mission and tomorrow's fight. Thank you for joining us. Let's get into today's conversation. Today's episode is titled, Honoring Our Legacy. It isn't simply about recognizing the outstanding work of our legal professionals. It's about recognizing those who continue to shape our profession. Over the past year, leaders across the JAG Corps have invested countless hours in updating resources that will influence how we educate, develop, and employ paraprofessionals for years to come. Today's conversation is about honoring our history while preparing for the future. Today's panelists are Command Sergeant Major Mike Bostic, the 14th Regimental Command Sergeant Major, former Chief JAGLA CSM and NCOA Commandant, Battalion CSM, AIT Senior Instructor, Course Director, First Sergeant, and most importantly, hailing from the great state of South Carolina.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Colonel Earl Wilson, current Chair, the Academic Department Leadership, TJAGLIS, former Deputy SJA at the 82nd, Group Judge Advocate at the 1st Special Forces Group, Airborne, Chief of Justice at 1st Cavalry Division, and Detachment Commander TJAGLIS. First Sergeant Kyrie Washington, incoming First Sergeant Direct Commission Course, former ALC Instructor, AIT Senior Drill Sergeant, 160th SOAR Paralegal, and 82nd BCT Senior Paralegal NCO. Sergeant First Class Renee Grill, current CASCOM and Fort Lee, Virginia Chief Paralegal NCO, former AIT Senior Instructor, CID Group Senior Paralegal, SVP NCO, and Army Recruiter. Sergeant Major Bostic, thank you for being here today. How has the role of the Army paralegal evolved since you first entered the JAG Corps?
First Sergeant, thanks for that question, first of all, and the opportunity to be here. And to answer the question, our role, I should say, has evolved tremendously. When I first went to AIT in like the mid-90s, we used typewriters to type Article 15s on carbon paper, and now we're like typing them up in Military Justice Online. We're not even typing them up, we're just entering data. And the system AI platform does all the work. We've evolved a lot from being folks that just triage case files or make copies for the attorneys or, you know, prepare calendars and schedule phone calls to actually, you know, critically thinking about the case file, assessing the damage of what the conduct was. You know, running through CID tape, you know, we do so much. So we've evolved a lot. And I'm so proud that our paralegals are, in a sense, within our regiment, at the tip of the spear. We say we're the backbone, but yeah, we're at the tip of the spear, making a lot of things happen. And I think from when our paralegals can really be engaged in the practice of delivering legal support across the Army, when we're doing it well, our attorneys get time to really focus on their litigation skills and their advocacy for the client, because the paralegals there drafting, executing, preparing, just, you know, knocking down doors for our cohort.
Sergeant Major, I do remember the typewriter when I came in, having the when we added in the new rank of the soldier, so thank God for Adobe Pro now.
Yeah, absolutely.
What qualities separate a good paralegal from a truly exceptional one?
Oh, wow, that's a tough question, First Sergeant, and it's loaded. Because there's a lot that I can say from my perspective separates a good paralegal from a truly exceptional one, but a good one can become a truly exceptional one. And I think everybody can become exceptional, but we have to understand across the spectrum, what is your role? Sometimes a junior paralegal is just that, not the leader, but they're the follower because it's not their time. We tend to lean on those truly exceptional paralegals too much, I think, sometimes, and we don't give them a chance to go out and develop themselves further. Sometimes you'll have that truly exceptional paralegal who you give all those tasks to because they're ready for that task. But you focus on them, but you don't focus on the other. So that's what I mean. Every good one can become exceptional. But what really makes that person exceptional is because they've been focused on. They've been developed. They get it. They truly get it. They know their role. They know when to show up, how to show up. Something I've told people from time to time, the four R's. Right place, right time, right uniform, right attitude. Those exceptional paralegals have the four R's. The ones who are just good, they may be lacking one of the R's, but those exceptional ones need to help those other ones become exceptional. Because if you're not doing that, then in my book, you're not really exceptional. You're selfish. So you gotta, I just told the group today, don't forget where you came from as a person. But again, there's not much that separates. It's just one can become the other, if that makes sense.
I do understand, Sergeant Major. From your conversation earlier with the paralegals, with the soldier straight out of AIT, and she asked the question about development. Now we have, today we're releasing the paralegal handbook. What prompted the development of the paralegal handbook, and what guidance was provided to First Sergeant Washington to get this initiative off the ground?
Okay, great. Thanks for that question, First Sergeant. I'm so excited to answer it as well. What prompted it? The 14th Regimental of the JAG Corps prompted it. Actually, the 5th LCS-CSM prompted it, because when I was assigned here, we had a working group trying to figure out the handbook, because we have a soldier training guide or a manual or whatever that is supposed to be archived in TRADOC's repository that somehow, some way, about a decade ago, when it was updated, I think 2014, we stopped updating it and then it died. It had tasks, conditions, standards in it, and it became stale. And when it was released, if I can say out loud, because I can't fix the past, everybody skipped over chapters 1 through 8 and they went straight to the appendix. They had the answer keys in it because they wanted to see what right looked like. What did an appeal on Article 15 look like? What did an admin separation example look like? Because when you're alone and afraid as a paralegal out in the field, you don't have time to read tasks, conditions, standards. Just show me what I need to do to be great. So when I told the team then, like, hey, I want a handbook. I want it to be filled with examples of what these things look like. What does a general power return look like if I need to execute one? I don't want to read, someone coming into the office, hey, here's what's going on. I need a general power attorney. Again, I don't want it to say task condition standard. So fast forward, I become the regimental. I'm like, hey, I got to get that done. Can I adopt that task? Should I just leave it at the school or should I take it on myself? And planting seeds along the way and, for granted, our branch isn't set up like other branches where we can dedicate resources to actually build a thing. So Sergeant Washington and the team of experts that, or SMEs that he gathered, my task to them was, hey, I want that paralegal alone and afraid or alone and unafraid out there to say, hey, I need to figure something out, turn to this handbook, and there's what right could look like. Because as I've been growing up as a young paralegal, when I was in E5 at Fort Bragg, my NCO sent me to a notary trainer for Cumberland County to become a North Carolina notary. And I still had that notary handbook that I've had to reflect upon from time to time. Like, hey, I need to do an affidavit. What does that look like? I flipped in the pages and it showed me what an affidavit needed that I leveraged either through my North Carolina notary skills or my Title 10 notary skills. No, I was never trained AR-27-55 as a paralegal. I was trained how to be a state notary. But then I used my Title 10 responsibilities to be greater. And that's what I want this handbook to be, something that a paralegal can turn to see what right could look like and not to be a training manual. I want it to be something they reflect upon. And the version that I read page to page, first started in Washington, I think is awesome. And I think it will drive us further to where we need to be as legal professionals to support our profession. And that paralegal out there in a battalion somewhere, wherever they're at in the world, I think they can turn to it and understand 15-6. Like, what do I do with a 15-6? Turn to the admin law separation chapter in the handbook and just start reading. And I asked the team, hey, set it up like that, and also take an example from, what is it called, the Commander's Legal Handbook. And I'm proud to say the version that I read, it's awesome. You guys should download a copy on your desktop, and don't let it be just something that sits on your share folder. Or if you get some money to print one out, don't just let it sit on your shelf. Read it, understand what's in it, and add to it. You know, a year from now, we delete the chapter on NJP and put a new version of NJP in there as that changes along the way. If that's enough, I'm very excited that it's finished. 7 years later.
I do remember when I graduated AIT, the motivation was you received your paralegal handbook when you became MOSQ.
Andrew MCM.
So I have a picture of myself. I'm giving a little thumbs up because we finally passed the last test. So hopefully we can bring that pride back, that tradition back with this handbook. But with that, Sergeant Major, what responsibility do you charge the leaders in having ensuring that these resources become living documents rather than references that just sit on the shelf?
Simply put, First Sergeant, the main expectation of our leaders now is to ensure all of the work that First Sergeant Washington and his team put into this doesn't go stale. It doesn't die on the vine. We have to make sure paralegals are being handed that document, whether it be on a share drive or whether it be the first thing they log into when you get a brand new soldier in your brigade legal office. They need to understand that handbook. I'm not saying AIT needs to be introduced with it because they need to learn the basics first. But when they graduate, like you said, someone needs to say, hey, add this to your kit bag, reflect upon it, and the leaders at scale need to make sure it stays updated. Someone needs to carry that torch, which I'll tell on ourselves as a core. Sometimes we put things out there, but we don't put the resources behind it, and it disappears. Like this handbook, it hasn't been updated in what? Since 2014. I'm not going to do math in public, but that's a long time ago. And 2028, we need to make sure it's updated again. Version 2, version 3, version 4. Again, just like your cell phones get updated, that book needs to be updated. But I'm not gonna put my knowledge level out there, but just make sure it stays a living document. However that needs to be, you know, leveraged on the JaxiNet or the mothership. Again, we gotta keep it a living thing. So First Sergeant Washington and his teammates, hard work doesn't die on the vine. Because from what I understand, the team put a lot of work into that. And they use all of the academic departments, our judge advocates here in the building, to kind of QAQC it, but also say, hey, this is not statute. Don't put all that review into it. Again, it's a handbook. It's policy. It's not even policy. It's like an SOP. So it doesn't have to be perfect, but it does need to be something we can reflect on as we need it across the force.
First Sergeant Washington, you heard it here first. Every 4 years, we need a new version. So when you pass this on, can you walk me through and everyone through your development process from concept to publication? And then could you tell us about how you gathered the input from the SMEs?
So initially, I picked up on the original concept that was in place, but I realized that we needed more people. It was a huge lift. It was a huge book. And also wanted input from the field so everybody felt included in providing information or writing for this training resource that's going to affect the whole CMF. So I blasted out an email to all command and chief paralegals, asked for nominations. Did they have any NCOs who are motivated to assist with writing or writing a chapter or leading a chapter? After I got all the nominations and gave the deadlines, broke all the chapters down to a team. Typically, I had the sergeants first class be the team leads for the chapters, and they led the development of that specific chapter. Throughout the process, we had different touch points, meetings, basically updates on where we are with the process, if they needed any information from me, any questions. And ultimately, we got all the way to the SME review process, where we had the professors here at the LCS kind of sit down and read through the information, like Sergeant Major said, and just make sure it's applicable to the paralegals and make sure it makes sense to them. And we got a lot of corrections back on that, which was very helpful in us developing this final product. And, you know, I'm excited. I had a lot of long talks with Sergeant Major Corbin throughout the process. Granted, I had a lot of self-imposed deadlines that I had to push to the right. There weren't any deadlines that I published publicly that I had to shift, but they were all self-imposed just to make sure we kept the momentum and we didn't let this fall through the cracks.
Colonel Wilson, from an operational perspective, and aside from referencing the handbook, how should judge advocates develop paralegals?
That's a great question for Sergeant. And before I answer it, I just want to touch on something that resonated with me. The entire time that First Sergeant Washington answered a very directed question about what he did to develop this handbook, he mostly used we, us, and the team. In fact, the only time he really talked about I or self-imposed was the management aspect of just making sure the ship was rowing in the right direction. And leadership is something I focus on. Just very impressed with that. And that tells me that this undertaking, that it will become a legacy project, was something that you did from a point of collaboration, because no person does it alone. In fact, you said the first thing you did was assemble the team. So I'm excited about this, but more importantly, I'm excited about your leadership and the way you do it. Now, to get to the point of your question about developing paralegals and judge advocates, I think that it's a very collaborative process of the well-developed paralegal. That's the heart of your question, right?
It is, sir.
Yeah, so, you know, that well-developed paralegal, he frees up so much space for the attorneys, like the regimental command sergeant major said, to dive into the finer points of legal practice, but they also become the Corps' greatest ambassador to our walking value proposition of what the 27 series community brings to a warfighting formation, right? We free up time for commanders to be able to focus on the things that they need to, right? Which is the tactics, which is the finer planning details to be able to go out and win our nation's wars, right? But to do that, the commander needs maximum space to not think about how do I get the quintessential problem soldier out of my formation? What's going on with this investigation that started months ago and all of the non-deployables in my formation that are really affecting my human resource metrics? And so to really get there, right, this well-developed paralegal personifies what we mean as dual professionals. They take the legal aspect of their job seriously, but they also take the warrior aspect of their job seriously. They can do an Article 15 with minimal supervision, but they can also put that parachute on and be ready to jump and be ready for that follow-on mission the very next day, right? But that doesn't happen overnight. It's a process. And so that's where the well-developed paralegal and the well-developed judge advocate, they start from cradle to grave at the same spot, where it's trust, it's collaboration, it's constant communication. And at the end of that journey, you get two people with the level of chemistry that now they can operate dependently, independent of one another. And so ultimately, when you get that in a formation, whether it's a brigade legal section or a division OSJA or any camp post or station, you now get the 27 series enterprise at that location operating at high level.
Hearing you talk about that, sir, it took me back. Obviously, I just came from 3rd ID being the command paralegal. And most of our leaders' time training with the paralegals, I pushed and motivated for the judge advocates to participate. but it was only when they were the facilitators. You coming from the 82nd, being the deputy, I think the deputy in command paralegal and in charge of the training of judge advocates and paralegals, what would your recommendation be for me in any command paralegal and judge advocate in doing a collaborative training of our OSJAs?
My recommendation would be yes, right? I think that our branch is unique for many reasons, but one of the most unique things about our branch, when you think about it from the tactical and the operational level, is that we are in the foxhole side by side working very closely with our enlisted population and our NCOs. Like, we are right there. And so I often look to higher levels of command as an example of how we should operate just day to day, right? When you look at a division, especially in a joint environment, usually the senior enlisted person has a very specific title, the senior enlisted advisor, right? Every commander is matched with a senior enlisted advisor. And that relationship is unique, built on respect, customs and courtesies, the hierarchy of the military, but also trust, yep. Right? Patience and a collaborative nature. So applying it to what we do out in the field, each paralegal is that first lieutenant's enlisted advisor, is that captain's enlisted advisor, right? And in order to build that chemistry, you gotta train together. So whenever command paralegals can find the time to plan, facilitate, and execute joint training, absolutely seize that opportunity. Get buy-in from the deputy. I don't think there's a deputy out there that thinks that it's a bad idea to increase the efficiency and the trust and ultimately the synergy between the officer and enlisted population. So I think that everyone should have that plan.
So with that, the charge of sending paralegals out and more focusing on when paralegals have to be that sole paralegal in the absence of the judge advocate, what makes a paralegal indispensable to commanders, judge advocates, and soldiers?
Yeah, I think the thing that makes a paralegal indispensable to the formation, because the commander ultimately represents the formation, the judge advocate, which is the legal enterprise, and the soldiers around them, is consistency, right? Being in the right place at the right time, having the information that you are accountable for, and being able to communicate up, down, and laterally, right? You can communicate up to your judge advocate, you can communicate laterally to your peers in the brigade legal section shop, and you can communicate effectively to the commander, right? Personal experience. In one of my last jobs, I had a paralegal who we had been working together going in a year or two. So the chemistry was there, the synergy was there. She knew how I thought, she knew how I operated. And we had missions going on in the Pacific. We had missions going on back here in CONUS. I was out the door a lot. The commander was out the door a lot. This paralegal was able to stand in for me, right, and exercise within the limits of my law degree, so not crossing any type of professional or ethical bounds, but also leveraging her technical expertise to be able to get actions done. That's being indispensable,
right?
I couldn't be 15 places at the same time. The business still had to be done, and sometimes my commander was somewhere I wasn't. She was that bridge. So she kept the organization running, and it was a byproduct of the time I invested in her and the time she invested in me in order to say, okay, this is how the judge advocate that I work with likes this business done. This is how he thinks. Execute. But before we got there, there were lots of calls of, hey, sir, am I thinking and looking at this the right way? Absolutely you are. And so that trust got built. And when the trust gets built, you really do become the cornerstone of a unit to handle business.
I think the trust is number one, because oftentimes, you know, the judge advocates, they push just military justice. And when it comes to courts martials, after you draft that charge sheet, agreeing on the trust of, you know, trust between judge advocates and paralegals. But to tie in our paraprofessionals, our civilian paralegals, we have Sergeant First Class Grill, the CASCOM, and Fort Lee Chief Paralegal. Well, most of your formation are civilian paralegals, legal technicians. You're developing a standard training package for our legal techs. Can you talk about What inspired you to develop those STPs, and what will it be?
Thank you for the question. So, to be honest, it was something that I saw a need for in my own formation. When I first became the chief paralegal at CASCOM Fort Lee, I did not know what a legal technician was. And this is common across the JAG Corps as a whole. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of NCOs or even your judge advocates that have no idea what a legal tech is. So when I first got there, I'm like, okay, let me go to the brigades. Let me go find where my NCOs are, where my paralegals are. I get there, and there's a civilian that's sitting in the office with a stack high up to the chair with legal actions. And I'm trying to figure out, where did this person come from? Where did they get their training from? Who hired them? And I realized this is a civilian with no technical training that has been hired by the brigade to do a job that I have been doing for 17 years. So the need came from what I saw in my own foxhole. And it wasn't that I wanted it to be this big thing. I just wanted to push something out to the field that can just help all the COEs. So for your typical brigade, you usually have an NCOIC, you have battalion paralegals, but for our COEs across the formation, every brigade has this legal tech. And for the COEs, there was a different type of training that was happening across the COEs. For the brigades, at the COEs, you will have these civilian legal technicians or legal assistants that are hired from the brigade commander, the deputy, and a lot of times the XO. These people are not legally trained like we have our 27 Deltas. So there was a big gap in having expectation for them to be able to do a brigade paralegal NCOIC job and what we have coming out of our AIT right now. So my goal was to make sure that there was a standardized training across the field.
Since you stated that the onboarding and training is significantly different for your legal techs versus our paralegal population, right? What are some ways that judge advocates can start to establish the trust and overcome that learning gap?
Sir, so to answer your question, I think a lot of it comes from ensuring that all comms are flattened, right? So me being a battalion paralegal in the past, a lot of times I did not have a trial counsel or a BJA that was standing right there next to me. But I will have commanders and first sergeants calling me all night long with their questions. There has to be a certain amount of trust that I had between my BJA or my TC at the time that they knew that Specialist Grow, Private Grow, can go out and answer a question and not put their bar at risk. I think the same exact thing needs to happen when it comes down to these legal techs, right? The legal techs are the lone wolf that's out there a lot of times at these brigades. They have to be able to build the same amount of trust, but I think this training alone, knowing that they have some type of standardized training, is going to allow them to build the trust because they don't have the experience as a typical 27 Delta. But they are now going to get this training once we actually start this onboarding process that either your senior MJ Ops or your CPNCO at a COE near you is going to be giving them within the first 6 months of them being hired.
Regimental, as for chief paralegals, is there guidance that we're missing to be able to guide and provide that mentorship and leadership to our legal techs when we get brand new ones of how we should train them while these STPs are being developed?
For certain, I wouldn't say there's anything we're missing, because when we do our chief paralegal orientation course or our chief paralegal command paralegal new developments course, we have blocks instruction on how to manage civilians that work in our OSJs, the division corps level, and also how to understand our DA civilian at large, which commonly known as the junior grades at the COE legal tech level. So we're trained how to support them, how to understand them. But if I remember correctly from all the experience I've seen, we have not, until Sergeant Grell came on board and Sergeant Major Coe, I believe, we have not had a block or a guidance that says, here's how you train them when they come onto the job. I mean, in my experience, we should train them the same way we trained in military paralegal when they come out of AIT, because the task is still the same task. They still have to prepare the admin step, still have to prepare the NJP action. And my first CPNCO job was at Fort Knox, Kentucky in late 2000s, 2008 to 2010, I think. And at the Armor Center and School in Fort Knox, I had similar brigades and regiments, I want to say, that had civilian legal techs. And one E7 NCIC was in charge. And he was making it happen, yes, but there were gaps. And one of the things I started out with, I didn't mandate them to come to training. I invited them to the training because I knew they were taking shortcuts in a legal product. But they're civilians, and there's a fine line, as everybody knows, with civilians. Their PD and their performance plan, it says what it says, but you can't get in their space the wrong way. And I'll stop there. But my approach was, hey, inviting them to training, see what their expertise level was, and then I had them lead the training because they were great at preparing the actions, but they took shortcuts. So that put them, for lack of better terms, on blast. Hey, teach us how you're doing it so we can get better. And hey, just add this to your block instruction, which was the standard. And next thing you know, they're learning the standard as they're teaching the standard as the SME. And from my experience, the relationship got so much better because they were very territorial. They had their way of doing things. It wasn't to our standard, but the product was to our standard. But I'm like, no, you're taking shortcuts and you're missing things. But we got better over time. But again, to answer your question, it was trial and error. And it was also called scar tissue, which we can't teach our NCOs, our senior leaders, everything. We can't give you all the answers to the test. Like I said earlier, we're going to give you 80% solution. That other 20%, you got to figure out, because that, to me, that's the development recipe as we go forward, because we want our leaders to be innovative. We want them to assume risk. But at the end of the day, is the mission getting accomplished? And are we breaking the law? No. Are we going against the regulation? No. But we're getting the mission accomplished. And then, like I said, mission command, our leaders at scale, at Ashland, I should say, they assume those risks at those levels because every organization is different. And every person is different, but we expect our CPNCOs, even our SJs and deputies, to walk around, battlefield circulate, figure out how people think. And yes, if you got legal techs on your team or just a lot of junior paralegal, military paralegals, you got to get out, understand how they operate, how they think, because they're representing you. They're representing me and TJAG and all the things that they do. Otherwise, we'd micromanage you and you'd hate it.
Yeah, the beautiful thing about this discussion, and more importantly, what you've done, Sergeant First Class Grill, is we're creating that standardization across the institution, right? And so that's where we improve the legal enterprise as a whole. Because I remember my first duty station on active duty, Fort Benning, I worked with some phenomenal yes. civilian legal techs, right? But by the time I got there as a junior officer, they'd been in the foxhole for a while.
Right.
And so they were training me, right? But if we want to create predictable outcomes where you have a core full of Misha Brutons and other people like that, yes. right? Then you standardize the training and the development roadmap so that that outcome is not the exception to the rule, but is the same everywhere, right? And I think that that's what's amazing about this conversation is that the core two instances, right, where we are standardizing something and institutionalizing it to level up our whole community of practice. It's pretty awesome.
For Sergeant Washington, hearing the conversation of leadership, development, support, and the importance of judge advocates and paralegals trusting each other, and you moving on to taking on the role as the first sergeant at the direct commissioned course, having the responsibility of being that first contact with the new judge advocates, what do you think, or what's your plan or your leadership philosophy for you taking into that position?
Thank you, First Sergeant Green. That's a good question. Understanding that the direct commission course is going to be a mixed population. So we're talking AMED, JAG, chaplain, you may have some cyber direct commission. He's also learned that regular branches such as AG, they can approve a direct commissionee to come through the course. So understanding that is going to be a mixed environment as far as like expertise and experience. I think the best way, especially with the shortened timeline too, is to show by example, show what my team and broadcast our skills, our relationships, our collaborative nature. And I've been thinking about it a lot on how it's going to be. Kind of dream about it a little bit because I didn't think I would see this coming or this day happening. But I think just showing the example of that officer and enlisted relationship between me and my commander and my XO and the instructors that we have down at the battery.
For everyone, great conversation, but to close this up, if you could leave every paralegal or legal tech with one piece of advice for the future of our profession, starting with you, Sergeant Grill.
Thank you.
What would it be?
So I believe that educating yourself nonstop is something that you have to hold on to. So never close the door on learning. Every day is another opportunity for you to meet somebody new or to learn something new. Yeah, that's my answer. Just keep that door open. Keep on learning.
Sir?
I would say seize the initiative, right? Seize the initiative and take advantage of your access and placement. From being in the Army, my perception is that our paralegal population and our legal techs are in close proximity to the officers that they work with. And so if you seize the initiative to get to know your teammates and you maximize that access and placement, being an NCO or a junior enlisted soldier in the JAG Corps, there really is no limit to what you can become and who you will ultimately be, right? You have the ability to maximize every education benefit that the Army grants to its enlisted population. You have the ability to get certifications as a paralegal outside of the Army. You have the ability to improve yourself and go to law school. You could become a warrant officer. You could become a future regimental command sergeant major in the Army. And you work side by side with the officers. You can learn from them. You can also mentor them and help grow them. And so just own it. Be curious, be courageous, and be professional. And if you do all of those things, the sky is the limit for you in the Army JAG Corps.
That's inspiring, sir.
Yeah. I think for me, or the tip that I would give would be maintain some level of work-life balance and understand that it's not always going to be equal. Sometimes that work is going to outweigh that personal life or the side things that you have going on. But I like to challenge people to counteract that work side. I was teaching spin classes while I was a senior paralegal at Fort Bragg, and that was my balance for me. I would literally leave work and go change and walk straight into the spin studio and teach a class. And I didn't say I used to force my soldiers to come do PT, but I made it available to them. It was free for them to come into the class to take it. But those types of things that essentially make you happy, whether it's taking vacation, spending time with your family, going to the movies, whatever it is. We do hard things. We talk about it all the time. We see people on their worst days. We handle some really hard and heavy things, and you need to balance that out with what who you are or with who you are on the inside to get some sense of self back, to maintain the sanity, to just drive on the next day.
Today's discussion reminds us that a profession does not evolve by chance. It advances because dedicated professionals invest in those who will follow. Leadership provides vision. Doctrine establishes the standard. Operational experiences keeps us grounded in the mission, and innovation prepares us for the future. As we celebrate National Paralegal Appreciation Day, let us also commit ourselves to continuous learning, professional excellence, and the stewardship of the Army legal profession. Thank you to our panelists for their leadership and contributions, and thank you all to the legal professionals for the indispensable work you do in support of soldiers, commanders, and our Army. That's why the Backbone exists, to bring together leaders from across the JAG Corps to share ideas, exchange lessons learned, and have the conversations that move our profession forward. Thank you for joining us for this episode. I'm First Sergeant Candace Green. Join us next time as we continue exploring the leadership, experiences, and ideas that shape the Army paralegals for the future of our profession. See you at the next formation.